Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
To another episode of Anfield Index Legends Podcast. My name is Joe. I am your host. And tonight we're going to talk all things Fernando Torres, El Nino. I have two awesome guests on tonight who are very, very accommodating for this because this is difficult, guys. I'm in America and the other two guys are nowhere near me and the time difference is huge. So I'd like to introduce both of them. Leroy, you are my first guest. Leroy of I name a specific pod, but he's on everything. You people probably know who he is. How you doing, buddy?
Hey, Joe. It's been a while since we last talked on the podcast, so really excited. You know, you mentioned that you're in America now. I'm in Malaysia, and our other guest, which you'll introduce later, is in India. So this is like the global podcast again.
Yeah, that's exactly right. That is the last time the three of us talked, actually. So speaking of my other guest, Shree in India, he has just had two twins recently. Doesn't sleep, but he is on this podcast. How you doing, buddy?
Hey, man. Good morning or good night for you almost. Yeah. That's the beauty of this podcast. Doing good.
Yeah, that is the beauty of this podcast. But again, these guys were really nice enough to come on. We must have bounced, 50 different times off each other. And this is what we came up with. So I hope everybody appreciates what we do and I think you guys like this because I got two big Torres fans who probably know more than I do about him. So I wanted to start. Everybody knows Torres played for Liverpool, but he started his career in his youth ranks at Atletico Madrid. So I wanted to talk a little bit about his achievements. We can talk later about his transfer to LFC. Luis Garcia going the other way in that deal. So Leroy, tell me about his career at Atletico.
Yeah, it's because when Torres was at Atletico, that was a bit before I started watching football. But, you know, in hindsight, when I look through the videos, when I look through the interviews, the career path he's taken, I think that is just like the dream story for any player who's a massive fan of that particular club. So he's a massive fan of Atletico Madrid. He's like their boyhood dream there. And, you know, I think Torres did really well from going from the youth ranks into the first team and, you know, being a captain so early for a club like Atletico Madrid. I mean, at the time, they weren't as prestigious as they are now. But I think for that period of time, I think, you know, being the star player and the captain at, I think he was like, 20 years old? I think that is a massive achievement for someone like Torres. And I think that was what made him so popular, is that he's so young, yet he's showing maturity levels beyond what you expect out of him. So I think that was, you know, basically the story, the summary of his career at Atletico. But I think Shree can give you a better breakdown because I think that would probably be the time where he's, you know, maybe tracked the career development of Torres before he moved to Liverpool.
Yeah, he had a great went youth ranks. I mean, he was a fantastic player for Atletico Madrid. He was certainly well known around Europe. Shree, you want to talk more about his Atletico career?
Yeah, actually, something not many people know is pre-Atletico. Actually, he played for a few of his local clubs. He actually started off as a goalkeeper, but he moved on to becoming a striker because he was inspired by a Japanese anime character called, I think I'm pronouncing it correctly, I hope, Captain Tsubasa. So that was his, like you could say, very early days inspiration. And then he became a striker. And then he actually, I think, joined Atletico when he was like 11 years old, I believe, if I remember correct, around 95, 96 was the time he joined there. And then obviously the goals flowed, people kept track of him. And that's where his progress came in. He moved on to the senior team by 2001 and again started off well, kept scoring goals. And he was immediately in the limelight. The minute he was in the first team, he was being noted. He was being tracked. Scouts all over the world were tracking. There were very early bids in his career. In fact, 2002, 2003 itself, Roman in his first season wanted to buy Torres. So actually, Atletico rejected a bid for Torres. And he, as Leroy said, he was a captain when he was 19. Not many clubs appoint. There's boyhood hero aspect apart. Not many clubs have the guts to appoint a player who's 19 as captain. But Torres was destined to be a big superstar. He was destined for big thing.
Yeah, he. I guess like you said it perfectly. He was, I mean, everybody knew who he was. And he ends up coming to us, which is pretty amazing. 07-08 is his first season at Liverpool, and my God, what a season! What a debut season! Shree, I'll stay with you. You can talk about his whole career. Talk about anything you want at Liverpool. Make it as long as you want, pal. Because as great as he was here, he wasn't here very long.
Yeah, in fact, see the point was it's one of those rare occurrences where Liverpool had a clear target in mind. You could say. We talk about, right, even in transfers, there's a plan A, then the backup, plan B, plan C. And Rafa Benitez, he was known to be a manager who plans very well in advance. He's very specific with his needs. So actually, he drew up a huge list of targets. Actually, they had 7 or 8 targets in mind as far as what I've read. And Torres was right on top of the list. So it was either we go all out for Torres, and if we don't get Torres, then we talk about a couple of, I think, was it Gilardino was one of those targets. I don't seem to recollect other players. So Torres was number one on the list. And Chelsea had a huge bid, I think 22 or 23 million bid rejected. And it was also precisely because Torres didn't want to leave Atletico Madrid. It was a boyhood club. So I was actually, because I followed a little bit of La Liga then. So I was quite surprised that Torres, and the fee we paid was club record, but it wasn't as high as what Chelsea bid. Actually, we got him for around, what, 20.4, I believe, is the official figure. So 20 million was a number which was slightly less than what even Chelsea bid a couple of years back. But it was made possible because Atletico didn't want to stand in the way of Torres. Torres always was a hugely ambitious player. He always wanted to win things. And he's seen Liverpool won the Champions League in 2005. He's seen the team growing consistently. And the biggest thing, he identified himself with Liverpool the way he identified himself with Atletico itself. So it was, I would say, a perfect symphony in terms of a player and the club having the same goals, having the same beliefs joined together. And as you said, 4 years, but that 4 years of Liverpool, I will never forget throughout my life. It was, for all we didn't win, basically with Torres, what? We didn't win anything. But those 4 years are memories I will never, ever forget, though it was a trophy-less period.
Yeah, it's really a shame. It was always, that period was always, in my eyes, remembered for, you know, Torres was a great player, of course, but it was always Stevie G and like a Torres and a bunch of other guys, kind of, which I know sounds harsh on a lot of the players, but if just a little more was done, you're talking about a team that could have won Premier League titles, probably Champions League titles. Leroy, what do you think about his first season, his Liverpool career? Tell me your thoughts on Fernando Torres just in general.
Yeah, I mean, you know, just as a background, I mean, you look at, I think Sri has mentioned this on another podcast as well, and that, you know, in India, a lot of people became Liverpool fans because of Michael Owen. I think that was the main reason why India has a huge Liverpool fan base. You know, I think there are people like, you know, as we talk now, maybe in their mid-20s to later 20s, if they are Liverpool fans, it's most likely because of either Steven Gerrard or Michael Owen, right? But for me, when I started watching, it was in the 07 season. That was when I started watching football. And I think for me and maybe the people just a bit younger than me, maybe 3 to 4 years younger than me, I think our striker idol would be Fernando Torres. We grew up watching Fernando Torres. We started watching football and in that process, we watched Fernando Torres, you know, just put on a great, magnificent show on the pitch. And I think that combined with what Steven Gerrard does, you know, I think every Liverpool fan would love Steven Gerrard anyway. So I think those two were sort of that catalyst that pushed me to become a Liverpool fan. And, you know, Torres, especially in that first season, I remember my dad was saying that there was this new player that signed for Liverpool, and against Chelsea at home, he's already scored a great goal for Liverpool, and you know, that is a promising sign for many, many more things to come, and that's definitely true. I think that season he equaled or broke Van Nistelrooy's record for the foreigner who, you know, in the first season in the Premier League scoring the most goals. And I think that is, you know, just a sign of things to come. But when you move forward, you know, you look at the numbers, you know, you just look at the numbers. It doesn't seem like Torres was adding too much. You know, I think in the second season, the 08-09 season, he's got something like 14 goals because of injury. He's been absent for, I believe, 8 or 9 games through injury. He had a thigh problem, he had knee problems and things like that. So in total, from 24 goals in the first season, he's only got 14 in the next season. But, you know, in that 08-09 season where we pushed for the title but just fell short, you think 14 goals is not a lot. But if you look at where the goals came from, that is what is most important, you know. I believe he scored 2 against Everton, and, you know, we yeah, won that game 2-0. He scored that very, very important goal against Man U, you know, where he shimmied, I believe it was Vidic, and then he just slotted it past Van der Sar. I think that was a very important goal, you know. If that goal didn't go in, who knows how the game could have went out, you know. We won 4-1, but I think that goal was really, really important. He scored 2 against Arsenal, where we drew 4-4. You know, that game where Ashrafin scored 4 goals, he scored 2 of it to try and keep things really alive. And that Blackburn game, I mean, that was, you know, he scored that goal by doing a weird 180 turn and scoring it to the far post. I think it was like 30 yards out, 25 or 30 yards out. That would be my favorite Fernando Torres goal of all time, you know. I think that kind of season, you know, it shows the importance of Fernando Torres. He doesn't score a lot of goals, but whenever he does score, it's really, really important. It's either to equalize for a game or to just score the goals to get us to win. I think that is a sign of a game changer, you know. Many strikers can score 20 goals a season, no problem, but how many of them come in games where you win 5-0, 6-0 really, really easily? But Torres, when he does score, you know, that is really the important time, and it's time to really clutch up and really make your chances count. I think that is what Torres is good for, and I think that helps him to help us to actually get that second place finish. You know, we could, as you said, Joe, we could have finished first even, but because it was the Gerrard and Torres show for that season, I think that was not enough for us to push to finish. I mean, you know, I say that Torres got 14 goals, but we could have done with another striker who could add another 10 goals even, and that would have been great for us. You know, whenever Torres was out through injury, we had someone who could come in and, you know, just contribute maybe another 10 more goals, and I think that would be just enough for us to get that first place finish. But, you know, I think that's something that, you know, maybe Rafa Benitez would regret. I think that's something that us fans would regret not seeing as well.
Yeah, they're great points. It always felt like there was just one player or two player missing. If they just went that extra mile, maybe we win more things. Now, sure, you did bring up a good point. We didn't win much during that time. But Leroy, I'll stick with you. Do you think, and I know he was injured here a lot, he only actually played 102 appearances for Liverpool. When you think about it, it's pretty crazy because of the injuries and the, you know, the falling out he had. But do you think the teams, the 07, 08, 08, 09 teams, underachieved at all, in your opinion?
You know, that's a really, really, really tough one. You know, I think in the 07, 08 season, that's when we're trying to transition into a new era, into a new period, into a new squad of players. So I think that in that regard, to retain top four, I think that's fine. I think we've met expectations. I don't think anyone really expected us to challenge for the title yet. So I think that's fine. But in the 08-09 season, I think, you know, similar to what happened in 13-14, similar to what happened in this past season, even I think what happened is that we fell short against many of the quote unquote smaller teams. You know, we managed to beat Man U. We did the double on Man United. You know, we drew against Arsenal, things like that. But I think the problem, and I think we won against both times against Chelsea as well. But the problem in the 08-09 season was we drew so many games. You know, we drew against Villa. We drew against West Ham 0-0. I remember that game really well. We drew against Hull City 2-2. We drew against Fulham 0-0. I think those kind of games were, you know, even though you are still getting a point, but that extra 2 points lost, I think that counts for a lot, especially when you're at the top. You know, Sri and I did a global podcast about, you know, when points matter and when you need to start defending and when you need to start attacking. But when you are challenging for the title and when you're trying to, I guess, overtake each other at the top of the table, every single point counts. And, you know, the difference between a draw and a win is so massive compared to, you know, when you are, let's say, mid-table or just in the second half of the table where losing and a draw, that is what, you know, that 1 point is really important. But at the top, a draw and a win, you know, that 1 point versus a 3 point, getting that 1 or 3 points, I think that is really, really important. And drawing so many games, that allowed United to really, you know, catch up and eventually overtake us. And that was the problem for us. And I think in that regard, you know, not being able to finish off these smaller teams or even trying to get the lead against them, I think that shows signs of underachievement. You know, we have great players, you know, Torres, we had a really consistent Dirk Kuyt there, we had Gerrard, who was, you know, just super, really, really massive that season, but we couldn't capitalize when we played against the quote-unquote smaller teams. I think in that regard, we have underachieved.
Yeah, I actually agree with you, Leroy. Sri, do you agree with Leroy and myself, or do you see it a different way? Did they underachieve? Could they have done more?
You could argue, see, the point was 2005, we had Istanbul, we had a victory. 2006, we had the cup win. 2007, again, we had a run to the finals. But in terms of Premier League, we weren't even close then. So it was quite clear, Rafa, it was labeled as though Rafa was great at knockouts, but when it was a week-in, week-out grind, Rafa wasn't up to it. So it was quite clear he wanted the Premier League at any cost. And 2007, 2008, we saw shifts towards literally attacking, going for the Premier League. But that was indeed the truth. Rafa was great at cup competition. He had one opponent in mind. He could literally dissect the opposition. Simplest game is the Juventus game. It's very commonly known as the game which people refer to when we talk about Rafa and tactics. 2005 Istanbul Juventus game, how we literally toyed with Juventus with the tactical shift. Like pre-game, we had a formation and then we changed it once kickoff happened. So give him a single game, a single opponent, Rafa was like real outstanding, world class. But the ability to keep grinding with his level of detailing approach, maybe it was just too much to ask for in the Premier League. And as Roy mentioned, and the problem is in 2016-17, we are still talking about dropping points to smaller teams. That's what is, it's a trend which has started ages ago and it's still there. So I don't think we should even be spending time talking about dropping points to smaller teams. It's now become a decade now, and we are still talking the same thing. So, unfortunately, that's the truth. And ability to literally define moments by single goal. Nobody even remembers Federico Macheda, how you want to call him. But his goal against Villa literally changed the course of the title run in 08-09. I think maybe Roy might remember that goal better than me.
That goes to give me nightmares, you know. if he, you know, of all people, it had to be that youngster, you know, that youngster. I believe it was his second game or his debut or something like that. And it had to be a really, really good goal as well, you know. It had to, you know, curl past Brad Friedel. I believe he was still at the goalkeeper at Aston Villa. It had to just curl past him so beautifully into the far corner, and it had to go in. That goal broke my heart a bit, to be honest.
that gave was, me like for me, that was, you could say, as good as the Aguero moment when City won it. Because that goal literally defined how the title, we were dropping points, but that was the only game where literally United looked like losing, you could say. And the ability, as Roy said, the ability not only from draw to win, United could convert a loss to a win, and we didn't have the power. We would go from a win to a draw, while United would go from a loss to win. So what are we looking at is basically Liverpool dropping 2, but United gaining 3. So a shift of +5 for them. And two such games let's say the run was over, and that was the problem with Liverpool. They couldn't consistently do, they couldn't treat every league game as a knockout game. That would be how I would summarize. Every game wasn't a knockout game for them. So some games they were great, some games they weren't. And over a season that showed up. And so for all the greatness of Torres, he's still one guy. He's number nine, but he cannot literally be nine players on the field. So for all his greatness, there's only so much a guy can do. And he was crocked by then. That literally 08, 09, 07, 08, 08, 09 was the glistening peak. But he was starting to feel the ill effects. And he had a couple of horrendous years after that. I would literally feel that it's better this guy doesn't play rather than seeing him play like that. It was one of the darkest periods for me as a huge Torres fan.
Yeah, it's all great points are made.
And Joe, you know, if I can just jump in really quick, you know, I think when you look at this 08-09 season, you know, at least within my circle of friends, at least within the people that I know, because at the time Twitter wasn't a huge thing yet, at least not for me. You know, everyone mentioned that Arsenal 4-4 game, that was the killer for us. You know, drawing that game caused us to lose the title. And then in 13-14, you know, everyone was speaking about that Chelsea game. I think that, you know, and that Gerrard slip, unfortunately, I think that was, everyone liked to highlight that, those two moments as the reason why we, I think the cornerstone of why we failed to get the title. But I think both seasons had the same issues, you know, we draw against teams or lose against teams that we should be winning against, you know. I believe in the 08-09 season, I think we lost to a smaller club. It could be a Middlesbrough or something like that, Middlesbrough or Portsmouth. I think we lost to either one of them. This kind of game shouldn't happen. In 13-14, we lost against Hull, for example. You know, again, this kind of thing shouldn't happen. And I think for the last decade, you know, or you could even say since the last time we won a title, the problem with Liverpool has been consistency. But we haven't really seemed to try to either add players or to maybe, you know, bring players from the youth ranks to add to that consistency. I remember that 08-09 season, I think midway through we were probably ready to bring in David Villa, you know, I think things like that were bound to happen sooner or later, but we didn't, and ultimately we had to focus all our energy on Fernando Torres, and, you know, given his injury problems, as Sri said, it became impossible. And I think in the 09-10 season, you know, I think that was when Gerrard was out for the longest period of time. Torres had to pick up the pieces, but even then he still got injuries here and there. I think that was the season where his knee really acted up. And we had to put all our hopes on David Ngo. I think that was the problem with us. You know, we didn't have a Fernando Torres like player that we could, you know, maybe bounce off to if let's say Torres wasn't available. You know, it could have been Torres and Villa, and I think that 09-10 season could have been the season where we pushed for the title again. But, you know, we went from Torres to Ngo, and that was the problem for us. And even now, there are some shades of that, you know, there are some signs of that here and there, but I think we can all agree that it's been a little bit better since then.
Yeah, and sure, you brought up the point, like, still having the same issue types. Like, you're talking about David Ngog, and it's, we could have had somebody other than him who is nowhere near the talent of Fernando Torres. And, you know, maybe if the ownership did it a little bit more, maybe we're having a different conversation right now. And I hope that's changing. It seems to be this summer, which again is, what, 10 years later, maybe we're finally getting this right. But now we're going to get to the point of the pod where we don't want to discuss, but we have to. So after Torres's glorious time at Liverpool, it comes to an end. It doesn't come to an end nicely, and there's always conflicting reports depending on who you ask. Do you blame Torres? Do you blame Hodgson? Do you blame Hicks and Gillette? Yada, yada, yada. But no matter who you blame, he goes to Chelsea in January 2011. Out of all fucking teams, he has to go there. Guys, I'll start with Sri. I'll come back to you and start with you. Do your feelings at the time of it when it happened, and are those feelings different now? Have you forgiven him? Did you ever blame him?
To be fair, I think I've said in a lot of pods, 2011 January transfer window was the last time I actually loved a footballer. For all the greatness and all the magic of Suarez, Suarez wasn't Torres for me. And I blame Torres for that. It's because of that move was the only reason why I never loved Suarez. I'm not saying he wasn't a great player. He was, in fact, you could say one of the top three attacking players you have ever seen on the pitch of Anfield. But I never loved him. And that was because of Torres. Actually, there was a 3-4 months period where I literally stopped watching football. And that is the only time in my Liverpool following career where I actually didn't look forward to seeing Liverpool play. And as I told before in the pod, Chelsea had bid for him in like 2003 itself. And you could say, why did he go to Chelsea? But nobody was prepared to stump up the price what Liverpool wanted. Joe, think reasonably. At that period of time, with his injury background and a clear vein in form, would you blame Liverpool accepting 50 million? Would anybody even bid anything more than 30 million, leave alone 50 million? 30 no. million tops yeah. was the price you could even dream of. And that was only, it's almost like Daniel Sturridge, we are asking 30 million. Why? It's because of his record when he is fit. Torres was a bit like that. When he is fit, he's outstanding. Imagine he was clearly down. Dalglish comes in. He plays against Chelsea, scores 2 goals. The cynic in us said he's auditioning for Chelsea. But the real fans were like, this is what he can do on his day. He can literally make defenders look like schoolboys. And that was the whole trend throughout his Liverpool career. Name any type of goal he scored that. Volley. Dipping volley. The Blackburn goal, he said. The goal against Marseille, where he would little beat defenders inside their own box, beat a couple of them, score. Nutmeg the defender, nutmeg the goalkeeper, dink the goalkeeper. The goal which Leroy mentioned against United. Nobody has ever seen Vidic like that. And Vidic, no, it was literally... It was Vidic. He was Vidic's nightmare. Every game, he would torture Vidic like anything. That game, it was not about beating Vidic. He got Vidic. But Van der Sar is great at one-on-ones because he has this huge frame coupled with agility and flexibility. So he waited till the last second. He was waiting to see whether Van der Sar would stay upright or would he go down and cover the angle. He went down, he dinked it over. Any type of goal, Torres would go. And the money Chelsea paid was for his ability, not considering the fitness. So you couldn't blame Liverpool accepting 50 million. The problem was making it sound like Torres wanted to leave rather than they wanted to sell. And therein lies the crux. Did Torres ask for the move or Liverpool just decided the price was too good to be true and we need to move on? And that was the time when FSG had just come in. They wanted to build with younger players. So it was a question of Torres still hadn't won anything. Let's not forget, for us, all his greatness, it was 2010. He won the Euro and they have won the World Cup. So he was a national hero. There was no doubts about that. But at club level, Atletico didn't give him much. Liverpool didn't give him much. He wanted to win things. He said it always. He wanted to win Champions League. He wanted league medals. Chelsea were good at that time. You could be assured of winning something at least. You don't know what they would win, but you could win. But one, Liverpool fans hated Chelsea because of the total contradiction in terms of philosophies of building sides and how to go about winning things. So the move to Chelsea literally hurt. One, it was unknown then, people selling for such huge money within the league, the money flow. And I think the move of Torres also hurt because we spent 35 million on Andy Carroll. There is no debating the fact. If you had bought, say, even 2010, it wasn't late with David Villa. So just going off an example, Leroy quoted, you spent 30 million on David Villa. Would we have looked differently on the Torres deal? Maybe. And therein lies the one, where he went. Two, made it sound like he wanted to move. And three, spending 35 million of that money on Andy Carroll, who was crocked again. I think all these put together made it look like left a literally a sour taste in the mouth. But did I forgive him? Absolutely. Joe, just to go off football, you like someone you are great friends with. They make a huge mistake. You fight. You don't talk for a year. But they don't stop becoming your friend, right? It's almost like that.
Of course not.
For me, it's Torres, after a couple of years, and especially once he moved to Milan, because I was a huge Serie A fan. So I was very interested to see what he does at Milan. Then, obviously, Atletico Madrid. And there was no one happier than me when he came back to Anfield to play, make that guest appearance. There was no one happier than... I, in fact, wrote an article on Anfield. I told Gags, Torres is back at Anfield. I'm writing. You want this article or not? I'm writing it. And that's that's how much Torres means to me. I know it's a Legends podcast and he might not essentially be a legend, but at least in my eyes, he is. Though he's one of the... It's almost like you could... I would be... You could laugh thinking that I'm like an Everton fan. The club is a success without winning anything. It's the same story for Torres. But what he meant to Liverpool, how he identified himself with Liverpool, and just the sheer ability of the man. You could say he was the most pure striker Liverpool have had after Ian Rush. Robbie Fowler, Ian Rush, yeah. And Torres. The ability for... Because the song, the Kop song itself, say he's got the ball and he scores again. That was it. Give him the ball, the man will score. He will find ways to score. And that was the greatness of the man.
Yeah, and that's... I actually agree with that. Most people would not. And my retort to that is always, what's the difference between what he did and what Luis Suarez tried to do and frankly should have been allowed to, but was somehow blocked, even though Arsenal did bid for him. I mean, he tried to get out of the club, but I still see, which makes me puke a little bit in my mouth, people still talk about Luis Suarez like he's been a player at Liverpool. And don't get me wrong, I love Luis Suarez, just like I love El Nino. But there was no difference in my eyes what they did. So, Leroy, how do you feel about that whole thing?
Yeah, that fiasco was just crazy, right? I mean, I've been hearing about Owen moving to Real Madrid and how that was a betrayal, and you know, you add that with, you know, how he went to United, that was the final nail in the coffin for sure. And it seems very similar to this Torres move. You know, Torres was leaving Liverpool to Chelsea, which I know to a lot of Liverpool fans, Chelsea is like the bane of their existence, so that is, you know, 1 year in the coffin. But I think what hurt the most is that he moved very, very suddenly. You know, he even handed in a transfer request, and I think that was the main catalyst to why he was able to push the move to Chelsea. And I think what was even worse is that he's moving to Chelsea not because of anything other than that he doesn't feel like Liverpool's going to win anything. And when one of your best players, you know, easily perhaps at the time the second best player at your club, if they don't feel that the club can win anything in the near future, then as a fan you definitely feel a bit, you know, a bit demotivated, a bit down, you could say. So that was really, really difficult. And you top that off with what Sri said, you know, we spent $35 million on Andy Carroll. Definitely something that we shouldn't have done. But I think we've done well to remediate that and I guess recoup at least a majority of that money back. So I think I'm not too worried about that. And I think what was even worse is that I believe it was that same transfer window where Aguero moved for $30 million. You know, if we replace Torres with Aguero, I think we will be in a really, really good spot, but we didn't. We replaced Torres with Andy Carroll. I think that was really, really hurtful as well. That was really, really hard to see as well. And yeah, as Sri said, you know, I think since he moved to Chelsea and you know, especially in that one or two seasons, Gerrard was absent. Gerrard wasn't able to play so much due to injury and things like that. I think that was the season where I started to watch football in a different light. You know, I wasn't watching for the enjoyable goals, for the crazy moments, for the magical moments and things like that. I was watching it just because it was a routine already. You know, I'm already used to watching football, so I just had to watch it. You know, I think that's just what happens. And that's where I slowly got into the tactical side of it and things like that. But that first three seasons, as we said, you know, Torres is going to be my Owen. You know, while Owen was the player that got many people to watch Liverpool, Torres is going to be that player for me. And, you know, while Suarez is definitely 100% a better overall football player than Torres, but in my eyes, I think Torres is still going to be the most complete striker that I would, you know, enjoy watching the most. Sure, you have your Lewandowski's now, you have Lukaku now who's pushing for that title, you have Diego Costa now, but Torres is going to be that benchmark for me. You know, like how Chelsea look at Drogba as their centerpiece to why they were so successful. I think Torres is sort of that player for me, you know, that striker, that complete striker who can do anything. He can hold off players, he can make those, he's fast enough to make those runs and get into one-on-one positions. He can create his own chances, and I think that is what's most important, you know. Andy Carroll couldn't create his own chances. you can say that Peter Crouch couldn't create his own chances and things like that. But Torres and Suarez, those two were the only strikers that I see that can create their own chances alongside someone like Daniel Sturridge. You know, while Daniel Sturridge might need a bit more help, but I think only Torres and Suarez can really take the game, you know, and control it and change it on their own. And I think that is what made them so special. And, you know, that move to Chelsea was really, really difficult. But the funny thing is that I believe it was his debut game for Chelsea, and he played against Liverpool, in fact, you know, playing against the old club and lost 1-0. You know, I think that was a big slap to the face to Torres, you know, hey, you moved to a club and you know, we beat the club that you think has the better chance to win titles and things like that. And I think that was a big slap to the face to Torres, and I think that set the tone for the rest of the future seasons for him. You know, never really recovered from that knee injury really well. Didn't perform at Chelsea as how many expected him to. I think he was still there when Benitez was, you know, the temporary manager there as well. And even Benitez couldn't get him to play as great as he did at Liverpool. So, you know, I think that 08-09 season, and maybe you could say the 9-10 season, that was the peak season for Torres, and he peaked maybe a bit too early, but I think moving forward he got what he wanted. He got the Premier League medal at Chelsea, and I think he got the Champions League medal at Chelsea as well. So, you know, if winning is what he wanted, then I think that risk got fulfilled for sure.
Great point, Abe. Yeah, I think you hit it right on the nail on the head right at the end there when you said he got what he wanted. He got both of them. You're absolutely correct. Sure, you wanted to make another point?
Yeah, let's not also forget that was the period when Liverpool were being taken over by FSG. So there was huge confusions off the field as well. And as a takeover deal, you would obviously want to get the premium you want. And how do you value the club more when you retain your best players? Liverpool promptly went and sold Javier Mascherano. Yeah, again, Mascherano was, you could say in a microcosm, was something like Torres. He was promised something. We reneged on it. He wanted to leave. We agreed, then we again reneged. He striked, he was dropped because we made it sound like he wouldn't play. Again, in a mini sense, you could say Mascherano became looked upon as a traitor. But we are talking about a single game, and he obviously went out of the league. But it was the same. You could say if Torres didn't believe in the club and left the club when the club needed him most, Mascherano did the same. But we don't consider Mascherano in any light similar to how Torres was, because Juan Mascherano left for Barcelona, and maybe strikers are obviously looked upon more dearly than you could say a destroying midfielder. But we are talking about players who were promised things, and we did the absolute opposite. We were promised newer players, good players, and we obviously promptly went and sold our best players. We didn't reinvest properly. And then actually Torres gave, I don't know if how many of us have read that in a book called Ring of Fire by Simon Hughes. There's a chapter exclusively devoted to Torres. And Torres presents his side of the story. And it's up to us to believe whether he still says the truth. He's been maintaining his stance. Okay, he didn't. There were a couple of years initially after the move where he said, I don't want to. It's not the right time yet to give my side of the story, because it was obvious people wouldn't believe it. It's not new for the press and the club to leak news to present their side of the story favorably. It happens still now. Like Virgil van Dijk, hello. It still happened. So obviously he felt that wasn't the time. People wouldn't be. I think the most plausible reason why he didn't present his side of story was he thought it was still too raw or still too new that people wouldn't believe him. People would believe he's just defending himself. Just fair, obviously, as a player, he needs to defend his case. But considering our recent history, then we sold Mascherano, a lot of things were promised, nothing on the field happened. We appointed Roy Hodgson, glorious 6 months, packs off, Kenny comes in, and we get a new sporting director in the form of Damien Comolli. He talks about meeting Comolli, and Comolli says to him that we have a new strategy in mind, we want to buy young players. And Torres says he thought that, okay, this is fair idea. We get it. I get it. But he was 27 then. He's like, if you are building a new squad with young players, I'm looking at 3-4 years at least till we win something. Nothing is guaranteed. 2 years, 3 years, 10 years. Nothing is guaranteed. He says, I'm not won anything as a player and I'm 27 yet. Can he afford to wait, say, till 31? And what if he doesn't succeed till 31? It will be too late for him to go anywhere then. And imagine, again, analogy of football. You are at the best years of your working career and you get a move where you literally get a huge promotion and you get to achieve things maybe you haven't achieved at the current organization. Any of us would move. It's logical. It's how humans work. It's the tendency of any human being. So he says that one, previous promises were not kept. Now he wanted to give the new ownership of Chan, but he keeps saying one thing, that there was nowhere he was assured that they wanted him to stay. Nobody told him, we want you here, we want you to play for us. And that was a bit of a statement he keeps saying throughout the chapter, that it was almost like Liverpool were prepared to sell, provided they got alternatives and they got a great fee. So they wanted him only if one of these two things didn't happen. But if Liverpool did get a good fee and they could reinvest, there was nothing stopping him. And he felt that, okay, maybe they didn't value me that much as the previous ownership, or when Peter Moss was there, when they didn't value me that much. So I think all of these things together, put together, you could say it is justified that he moved. Maybe not in January 2011, you wouldn't say that, but it's perfectly fine to understand. Fans, we are emotional. Why do we like Torres? We value Kenny Dalglish, we value Rush. They've all won so many trophies. We are talking people who have won 20, 25 trophies. And we are talking about the same guy on a Legends podcast who didn't win anything with Liverpool. How does he even get a show on AI Legends? Because people connected with him. They felt that he was one amongst us. He was a scouser. Like how we say Lucas Leiva is a scouser. In 3-4 years, he understood the city. He got what the city was. He understood the fans. He was one amongst the fans. And that's why it hurt us so much, because one amongst us was leaving us.
Yeah, it's so important for people to realize, too, who are new to the game and didn't watch Torres live or couldn't see any of his live games, is that he really was a scouser, you know, like that. And then him leaving us was really dagger in the heart. And then out of all clubs, he had to go there, you know, a plastic club, which has no history. Is a fake club. It hurts. And before we move on, I do want to, it was my mess up. With Chelsea, he won the FA Cup, Europa League, and Champions League. I don't believe he won a Premier League medal, but he certainly did win with the ultimate prize, with the Champions League. So normally when I do these, I don't talk about international career because I'm not a huge fan of bringing that up. But I feel I'd be remiss if I don't bring up that Spain golden era. You know, he won a lot of under 16, under 19 championships, but you know, they won the World Cup in 2010. They won the Europa or the Euro in 08 and 012. So this is a team that won everything. So this is kind of a two-part question. You guys can answer how you want. Leroy, talk about Torres's time there, and how, and was he just as great of a player as he was at Liverpool there? I know it's a different system and I know it's hard to compare, so that's a tough question. But the bigger one I wanted to ask is that Spain team an all-time great one? Do they compare with all the other all-time great teams of, you know, like your France's, your Germany's, your Brazil's? What's your thoughts on that?
I think this Spain team is really, really weird to dissect, you know. I think when you look at that 08, I think it was the Euro 2008 squad. I think what you got there was a team of players which were still developing, you know, not really at hitting their peak yet. You know, you look at Xavi, you look at Iniesta. At the time, they were really good, but they weren't really hitting their peak yet. And then you look at, you know, someone like Fabregas, who's also really good. Xabi Alonso was pretty good as well. But I think that team was, you know, just overachieving beyond levels that you would expect. You know, you look at that, you just look at that backline and you don't really see much stars. You know, you look at the Spain squad, in recent years, you know, you got Jordi Alba, a really good left back. You have Pique, you have Ramos, and you have, you know, these kind of players around that are really established, really, really good, and they're really hitting their peak. But when you look at the squad at that time, you know, in 2008, they weren't really solid, fully developed players yet. You know, they were still developing, not hitting their peak yet, but yet, you know, they still managed to win the Euros, and I think that is a testament to how much they've overachieved. You know, not to say that they aren't talented players, but at least during that time, you could see that there is a case to be made where they've just overperformed everyone else and even beyond their own expectations. And I think you can also link that to their coaching and things like that. And I think in Euros, they didn't drop a single game. I think they won all games throughout the whole competition. I think that is a great sight to see. And Torres is definitely a big part of it, you know. He scored the winning goal against Germany, and Germany at the time was one of the favourites as well. So I think, you know, speaking about Torres in isolation, he scored two goals in that 2008 Euros, but I think as a whole, you know, you mentioned that Torres is just someone who, you know, like the bane of Vidic's existence, you know. I think whenever you play Torres up top, it forces defenders to be a bit wary of him. Defenders can't push up as much as how, you know, like now how we see centre-backs push up with the ball and try to maraud up towards the pitch. But at that time, when you have a really good striker like a Drogba, like a Torres, like a Van Persie, you sort of have that mental game going on. You know, are centre-backs allowed to push up a bit more, or should they stay back a little bit to make sure that these strikers are kept in check? You know, I think there is a case to be made where Torres is that kind of player. You know, he's just really, really lethal enough in the sense that if you even be a bit complacent for that 1 second, that one through ball coming in could lead to a goal being scored by that particular striker. So I think Torres brought that sort of level of, you could say, that mental aspect to the game for that Spain squad. And I think, you know, moving on to that World Cup, did really well as well in 2012 Euros. Still, while he wasn't having a good season at Chelsea, he had a pretty good international showing at Euro 2012. So I think as a whole, you can say that Torres was both a club player and a country player. You know, a lot of people were, you know, giving smack to Messi on that, you know, being really good at a club level, but not really performing at international level. And, you know, even though that is pretty BS, but, you know, that is the mantra going on. I think Torres is someone who is able to perform relatively well for both club and country. And I think that is what made him such a great player. And, you know, even at the international level, we saw what he could do when there's him and the David Villa in the same squad. And, you know, I think that was, you know, that is why everyone has been craving for David Villa, you know, craving for that signing to happen, but ultimately it didn't. And yeah, I think that is something that all fans wanted to see at some point in that Liverpool side, you know, especially that 2009-2010 season. I think that was when we definitely needed a David Villa type striker to complement Torres. And I think we almost got that with Suarez. You know, if Torres was willing to stay another half a season, we could have seen that partnership happen. But I think that's something that we should just, you know, put it aside and not remember too much.
Yeah, you just gave me the ultimate gut punch. The gut punch there, Leroy. Thank you. That one, still think of that, and it never happened. And that's, I know his Chelsea career went down the tubes, and that David Villa point's great. He is such a fantastic, I mean, still a fantastic player in the MLS, which is the MLS, but what a player he was.
And I think you look at, even you look at Torres, you know, complete striker. He's not really a target man, not really a speedster like Owen, but he can do everything and anything on the pitch in terms of that striker's position. And then you look at Villa and you look at Suarez, both you could classify them as strikers, but they're just an anything player. You know, they can play on the wing, they can drop deeper down the pitch and play through balls and play like a number 10. They can even play up top and play as a lone striker and be really, really good as well. So I think when you look at what Suarez brought to the table alongside Sturridge, you know, Sturridge is sort of like, you can compare Sturridge to Torres in certain ways. So I think when you think about it, you know, if we had Torres and Suarez, or Torres and a Villa type player, imagine what we could have done on the pitch. I think that would be crazy to see.
Oh gosh, yeah, that would have been something special. So, mm-hmm. Shri, same question to you about the Spanish national team and Torres' role.
You could say 2008 was, you could say, his glorious bit when it comes to international. This is just my personal opinion. I love the 2008 side. The 2010 side was greater, but I didn't enjoy watching them. So therein lies the difference for me when it comes to Spanish teams. And let's remember, let's talk 2010 a bit more. Pre-World Cup in April, he decides to cut short his Premier League campaign. He had a surgery in April 2010 because he knew the campaign wasn't going anywhere with respect to Liverpool. So he decided to cut his season short, has a surgery so that he's fit for the World Cup. there were questions whether he should be picked, and then Vincent Del Bosque obviously goes and picks him. But in 2010, he wasn't first choice. I, in fact, remember there was a piece on The Guardian. I don't know how many of us recollect in 2010, Sid Lowe writes, and it was startling to read. He said that basically Torres is Spain's Emil Heskey. And that's what he wrote in 2010. And that was my reaction too. But he goes on to explain why. And Torres hadn't scored in a World Cup till then. And he didn't score in the qualification either, while SK at least scored. But when it was put in, Torres himself said, "I'm David Villa is the goal scorer. I'm not the goal scorer. People shouldn't expect me to score. If I was 17 and I didn't score, I would feel bad. But not now." And people attributed lots of things to his, whether is he trying to take the pressure off himself. But Vincent Del Bosque and others also said the fact that he's now in the team playing a different, like how Heskey was. Remember, Holier came out with one of the interview when Heskey didn't score, that how important was his team, how he was important towards the balance in terms of creating and assisting goals. And that was the role literally penciled in for Torres. He wasn't started. In fact, he came on the 2010 final very late on, in extra time only. But 2008, he scored the winning goal. Obviously, if you score the winning goal, which wins the first trophy for your country after ages, there's no debating he's a national hero in Spain now, because of the goal he scored, as Lira said, against Germany in the 2008 final. 2010, he was a really big part player, and because he wasn't fit, Sid Lowe in that article almost goes on to say 2010 was like pre-season for him. He hadn't started in 3 months, then he gets a game against Honduras, then he plays against Chile, and Del Bosque himself says he was subpar in the group stages. And then David Villa, obviously, and they play, 2010 was the peak 4-3 when we are talking about, so there's obviously Villa alone playing up front. Torres just doesn't get a chance. So 2010, a great side, but literally no contribution from Torres. So 2008 for me is the career highlight for me when it comes to Spain. But Emil Heskey of Spain, don't forget that.
Yeah, that's something else. So, all right, before we get to the quiz, Sri, I'll stick with you. Tell me, everybody has to, but your favorite games or any goals or anything, your favorite standout moments, I'll say, from Torres' career. We'll stick with Liverpool.
The first goal against Chelsea. Huge money signing, 20 million signing of a player from abroad coming in. Statement signing, goes and scores against Chelsea. Great moment. Personally, the best goal is what Lira has said. There's nothing topping Blackburn. The ridiculousness of that goal, I mean, he receives the ball. He has no rights to score the goal. He lets the ball dip above his left shoulder. You could say it's almost like, if you remember the Jose Enrique Suarez combination, where the ball literally dips from above the left shoulder of the striker. It's just that Suarez is on, you could say, when he's attacking the goal, he's on the right side of the goalkeeper. This is just that Torres is on the left edge of the box. He lets the ball dip. And the ball, by dipping, literally goes away from the goal because the ball is coming off his left shoulder. And then he hits the ball first time after the ball bounced. Hitting a volley on the full is tough, but isn't as tough as hitting the ball on the bounce. Because once the ball has bounced, you have to judge how high the ball is going. And hits it first and rocket into the top corner. Nothing like that goal. Goal against Marseille, goal against Inter Milan. What goal? Nemanja Vidic, we have talked, the goal against United. And for some funny reasons, the two goals he scores against Chelsea in the last goals at Liverpool, that almost showed like he wanted to stay, keep me here. And it also showed that when he wanted to turn up, there was no one like Torres. Even a croc Torres was great. He could kill Chelsea single-handedly. Funnily, those two goals had to be remembered because it was his last goals at the club.
Leroy, same question to you.
Yeah, I think Sri has stolen a lot of my picks, but I'll just repeat them anyway. So, you know, I think definitely that goal against Blackburn, you know. I think the comparison to that Suarez goal against Newcastle, I think it was against Newcastle, right? I think it was the one where Enrique gave the half field sort of assist. I think
yeah.
I think that
yeah,
was,
it
the
was
goal,
Newcastle.
I think yeah, I think that's very interesting. Now that I think about it, I think that can be the you can say the moment that highlights the difference between Torres and Suarez. You know, Torres gets the ball. I think it was a, he uses his chest to control it and then just fires it into the far post. I think that shows the clinicality of someone like Torres. You know, just how great he can be in scoring goals. And then when you look at Suarez, he controls the ball. You know, pushes it to the side of the keeper. You know, gets an open goal and scores it. I think that shows the I say the flexibility or the versatility of someone like Suarez. I think that goal, you can use those two goals as like the comparison between what type of strikers, what type of players, you know, Suarez and Torres are. I think that Blackburn goal is just amazing. You know? I think I've not seen a better control and volley since then. You know, I think that's really, really good. I think the other one was, I think Sri also mentioned this, that the away game against Marseille. If you want to talk about players gliding with the ball, I think that goal is the one that you need to watch. You know, he gets the ball just, you know, a bit, not really, he's still in the box, but, you know, a bit further from goal than needed. He just glides past two players and finishes it into the far corner. I think that is also a show of how versatile Torres can be, can just do anything on the pitch. I think another one, this is a bit funnier, but I believe it was against Birmingham, and this was a game where Rafa substituted Torres off when he needed a goal, and Gerrard just gave that what the F face. You know, I think that was a really, really funny, really, really great moment to see as well. And I think the fourth one, I swear, it's still Liverpool related, is when Daniel Agger gave Torres the elbow. I think that was another great sight to see. I think, you know, wow, I love Torres, but I also love Agger as well. And, you know, Torres having just moved to Chelsea to get an elbow from Daniel Agger, I can't complain, to be honest.
Yeah, and it was probably a much-deserved elbow, and there's probably not a Liverpool fan on earth who didn't love that when he did it. So, all right, boys, let's get to the all-important quiz. Let's see who – and you guys can do this either way. You can play against each other, or you can do it as a team. It's really up to you. I think you'll probably smash this, but
– no, we have played against each other. It wasn't good. We have done it once before. Leroy might recollect that.
I do. But you know, I'm done being on your side, Sri, so I'm going against you.
All right, I like that. I like the competitiveness. And it's whoever I hear first. It doesn't mean I have to buzz in or anything. So first question is, against which team did Fernando Torres make his Liverpool debut?
Chelsea.
Mm-mm.
Was that right or wrong?
No, I was wrong. He scored his debut goal.
Oh, yeah, that was a scoring
debut. I can answer now. Aston Villa.
Yes, Aston Villa is
right.
Correct.
Mm-hmm.
That is correct. Second question is a two-part question. This is a little tougher. Which team did he score the most Premier League goals against? In his career, obviously.
There's a part of me that wants to say Chelsea, because I can just remember all the goals that he scored against Chelsea, right?
That part of you is correct, my friend. It is Chelsea. And the second part of that, which team did he score the least against? You can have two different answers for this if you want to, because I'll give you the amount of goals. It was one goal against two Premier League teams.
Ah, I see. Okay. He's got to be one of the lower sides, right?
That's okay. What's that?
I'm going to guess one is Birmingham.
No.
I don't recollect him scoring more than one against them.
I can tell you what I have. You might be right, but he's got one goal each against Newcastle and West Brom.
I won't dispute that.
It's a bit of a tough question.
I was thinking either Wigan or Portsmouth or both, that, you know, those kind of teams. But yeah, I think, you know, you say Newcastle.
I was just going for teams who literally get relegated immediately once they are back, so that you would have faced them less.
All right, who against which team was his last goal for Liverpool?
Chelsea.
Last goal.
Last goal.
I don't think it was Chelsea.
It was not Chelsea. No, it was not Chelsea.
I know. I remember. Sorry. It was the next game, Wolverhampton.
Yes, it was the Wolves. That's correct.
We scored. Right, so, I think Raul Morales scored in that game too, I think.
Yes, he did. Yeah.
Yeah.
And we actually won that one. So all right, after his first season, the 07-08 season, he finished with, I can't remember the goal total. He finished tied for second, 24 goals. Thank you. He finished tied for second with Emmanuel Adebayor.
Yep.
Who finished first?
Cristiano Ronaldo. I mean, this was about Torres, but you know, that season for Cristiano Ronaldo was just crazy, right? 30 over goals.
Outrageous. Yeah.
As a winger,
it was unreal.
That is unreal. I mean, in terms of numbers, I think Suarez is the closest to that. You know, you could say that Van Persie at one point, but
yeah.
I think that one for a, you know, at least at the time he was a winger, a wide player, a wide forward. You could say 30 something goals is just crazy.
It's unreal. So there's a second part to that question, and Leroy just destroyed the first part. So let's go to the second. So the most goals in the Premier League, they call that the Golden Boot, as you guys know. Mm-hmm. Who has the most Golden Boots ever?
That's a tough one.
It is. It's, you guys definitely know this player. It's not somebody who's random, obviously.
Part of me wants to say Alan Shearer. For some reason, but
that's a good shout. But that is not right. But that is a good shout. That's a very good shout, actually.
It isn't Bubba. Who's been there for ages? I would think, but I don't know how many he's gone. In recent years, the only name I could come up with is actually Aguero. But I don't know if he's won that much.
It's because not.
He's also injured.
Nope. If you guys can give you hints. This player mm-hmm. has won four. That's the most. He has four.
Yes, four.
Four total Golden Boot awards.
I'm thinking, you know, my first shot was Alan Shearer because, you know, he's just one of the greatest strikers in the Premier League. And I think mm-hmm. alongside him, you could say it could be Thierry Henry. So I'm just going to go with Thierry
Boom.
Henry.
There it is, Thierry Henry.
Yes.
Stepping up to the plate. There it is. I don't know who's winning this. I hope you guys are keeping... So, actually, I think Leroy might be winning this.
I don't know. It's a friendly competition, so you know everyone's a winner.
There is no such thing as a friendly competition. So. All right. So we have a few left. What is the highest ranking he's ever finished in the Ballon d'Or?
Third.
Bam.
Nice one. Yeah.
And for extra credit, either of you guys, can you tell me what year that was?
2009, was it? Because it was the year of Messi won, I believe.
You're so damn close.
2008?
I'm going to say 2008.
2008.
Yeah. Sorry, yeah. Obviously, the Euros was in 2008.
The Euros, yeah. I was like, so. All right,
I
we
mean,
got
you know, you get men of the match for that Euros finals, I believe, right? So I think that is definitely going to push you to get a higher ranking, but I don't think you can out someone like Messi for sure.
Yeah, no, it's a bit difficult. So, how many total goals in all competitions did he score for Liverpool?
62 or something like that, I think.
Premier League or all competitions?
Okay. All competitions. So
for Liverpool alone?
Just Liverpool.
I'm guessing it's got to be closer to the 80 mark. I'm going to say 80.
That is pretty incredible. It's 81.
Oh.
So that's...
Some stats in 60, though. Must be Premier League goals alone, then.
Yeah, probably. If you're looking at Wikipedia or something like that, I think they just do Premier League. But all competitions, he had 81 goals and 142 appearances, which, again, put that into perspective. That is incredible.
Less than one and two.
It's unreal. Yeah, that's good math. For people who aren't listening, that's good math.
Even in Premier League, he has six. I'm just looking up Premier League. He has 65 in 102.
Yeah,
that's again almost the same.
It's unreal. He was such a great. He's still a really good player.
Looking here. You know, he played 142 games and scored 81 goals for Liverpool. But mm-hmm. at Chelsea, when he moved to Chelsea, he played 40 more games, but he scored about 40 less goals.
Oh yeah, he was. his knees were so shot.
Yep.
Which I guess was a good thing for us because we got 50 million for him. So, so we got one more question, and I'm curious to see what your guys' answer is on this. What team almost signed him before we did?
I didn't get it. You mean in 2000 before we signed him?
Right before we signed him, a team literally almost had him.
And Manchester United.
There it is.
I was gonna get that. I was thinking either United or like a Spurs or something like that. But okay.
I was waiting for you to say Chelsea, and you went with the correct answer. It was Manchester United. Yeah, he was really damn close there, and ended up coming here. So, I guess that's history. But, gentlemen, thank you so much for coming on. Again, I know it's hard with the timing. This is like a global pod. You guys are cool-ass people. You're good friends. But before we go, Leroy, I'll start with you. Any plugs?
Nothing much. I mean, you know, now is the transfer period. That's why, you know, we are able to take a breather from the current state of Liverpool and talk about Torres a little bit, to reminisce a bit. But, you know, since it's the transfer season, just check out the community podcast. It should be out once every week or every 2 weeks or things like that. So if you're looking to widen your knowledge about certain players that may be linked to Liverpool or may be good fits for Liverpool, then I think that's a podcast to check out.
Cool. And people, don't sleep on Leroy. He's a young man. You guys don't know this, but he knows a fuckload more about you do than soccer/football. Just throwing that out there. And Shri, how about yourself?
Nothing much happening either on my friend, the podcast which Leroy talks about, the committee, especially the one, I think the 10 under 21 center backs. Is that correct, Leroy? Did I get that?
11.
Exactly.
11,
right?
11 under 21 center backs.
With Dave Hendrick, that's outstanding to listen.
It's
very good.
Yeah.
That's one of the best podcasts I've actually listened in recent times. That's one, and the latest episode of the Desi podcast. If you just want to forget your worries, just listen, just have fun. Listen to it. Especially a huge shout out to Cam Branch on that one. The way he says, yeah. Phil, that's worth listening to. So that's the plugs from my side.
Awesome. Well, to all AI listeners, everybody around the world, thank you so much for tuning in. I hope you enjoyed this as much as I did. And for myself, I will look forward to seeing you in the next episode. Thank you all.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads. Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays.
Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.